You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Fix with me, Jamie Holm. Tonight, we're going to kick off a series of my Liverpool live shows. You may have seen us do them before. The idea is where we will ask guests to tell us a little bit about how their love of Liverpool Football Club started and what their journey has been like as a fan ever since. So I'm delighted to say joining me tonight to do just that. We have Gav, Shawnee and Phil. Gents, how are we? We all keeping well?
All good.
Great.
Phil, you've got that mischievous look on your face already and a nice bit of product placement from Gym Plus Coffee there, mate. I like it.
Just hopefully helping working our magic and that the lads will start sponsoring the pods or even showing us a bit of free gear. It'd be great. That'd be great if you're listening there.
I'm fully on board. Shawnee, still in Spain, looking tanned and healthy, mate. How are you getting on?
Don't know what you're talking about, mate. Better Kenny this week. You'll have to tax man after me, Jamie.
Sorry, lad. Didn't mean to hang you there. Gav, all good, mate?
It's quarter o'clock.
All good. I'm not in...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey,
not in Spain. He's in Curaçao.
He's on the deck down the river, Chapel.
I'm going
there. That's a green screen behind me, like Galbridge. I am.
I'm going to Monaghan tomorrow to play golf, just in case the tax man is asking. But yeah, golf tomorrow, Monaghan. Thank God.
You're a happy man now. The courses are back open.
Oh, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've got two footy matches this week and I'm like a kid at Christmas. We're finally able to play competitive games again. And Mr. Phil Casey left the football club WhatsApp group today. You'll be shocked to know. It was emotional, Phil.
I called it a day for the fifth time. I've had more comebacks than Ric Flair at this stage. I said, right now, I can't. At this time, though, as the surgeon said to me last September, he says, yeah, come on, play a game if you want. But he said, you'll be back into me next year and you'll have to we'll have to cut your knee out and put a fake one in instead. So I said, right, I'll listen to his advice and stick to it and hang up the boots fully this time.
We got to play a couple of games together, and the one personal highlight is when he rocks up to his first training session dressed in a full pink goalie kit. Only Phil Casey could rock up with a new group of lads in full salmon pink, would you say, Phil? Salmon pink.
Salmon. It was much more salmon pink than the salmon pink that's in the Liverpool kit. Like, it's proper pink, so still have it.
Big stage.
It's going up on the wall. As soon as I have my man cave, it's going up on the wall along with the other jerseys, so love it.
Right, so lads, tonight...
All the New Balance jerseys and that I really like. So.
Hold that thought on the New Balance stuff because you may be able to bring that up as your glory years of a fan was probably linked to our New Balance kit. So the plan, as I said at the start of the show, we want to basically dive into your time as a fan. And the best place to start, I suppose, because there's probably a big Irish contingent in Liverpool. And me, as a Liverpoolian, it'd be good to understand, I suppose, how you first became a Liverpool fan. Is this something that was kind of encouraged in school? Is it kind of brainwashed from parents? And Gav, I'll come to you first.
My father was a Man United fan. My mother didn't give a shit. And I think all my father's side are Man United fans, and there was 12 of them or 13 of them. And my mother's side, all the men anyway, bar one of them, I think one's a Leeds fan, they were all Liverpool. And I spent an awful lot of time with my mother's side of the family, so it was always going to be Liverpool, despite my dad's, you know, trying to buy me Man United jerseys with my communion money, mad stuff like that, bringing home Man United posters, and they were put up on the wall and quickly taken down. And it was just, honestly, it was the influence of uncles, because, you know, the youngest, my mother's youngest brother is only 4 years older than me, 3 years older than me. And so I think I've three uncles within 8-9 years of me. So, you know, even as a 4 year old, you had, they were all 8, 10, 12. They play football with you. And it was always going to be Liverpool, always going to be Liverpool. And that's how it started, and that's how it is until this day, you know. So I'm glad my uncles have more influence than my father, to be honest with you. And so it was always going to be Liverpool for me.
I listen to stories like that. There's a guy that I coach with, and he's a Man United fan, and one of his sons is a Liverpool fan. Does it make me less of a parent that if my kid actually rocked up and said, look, Dad, I want to be a Man United fan, I'd have a genuine problem with it? Like, I wouldn't be, you know what I mean? How can we sit down and like have conversations, and he's there putting up pictures of Marcus Rashford and Harry Maguire on the wall? I don't know. Phil, you're a parent. How would you take to that?
I can explain. Right, so my son, so my two daughters love football and love sports, and it's grand, but my son pretends to like football, right? He's not, he's big into the scouts, and he just hates sport, right? I don't know where he gets that from, right?
All the scouts game must be New Balance, is it?
It is, yeah. you reap what you sow. He has a lovely neckerchief. But he pretends to love football, but he's I won't go too deep into my own personal life. But anyway, so his mother's side of the whole thing are all City fans. And obviously, I'm a big Liverpool fan. Now, that wouldn't have really mattered about 10 years ago, but it matters now, you know that way. So, like, in terms of like City were nothing. When he was born, had a bit of investment at that stage, and then Liverpool came along. So yeah, he's appeared to me when I've been picking him up, Jamie, and he's been wearing Manchester City jerseys. So I've told him to take it off, and made him sit in the car with no top on. So you just say it's not acceptable. They're like, it's just, if you're not going to like football, you're not going to play football, you're not going to sit there, just wind me up wearing a Manchester City jersey. Now, it's great, he only buys Liverpool jerseys, and he hides the Manchester City ones away from me, so he pretends that he supports Liverpool. So it works. It's just brainwashed children. So, that's so what you're there to do.
You have your, I don't know how old your kid is, but you basically have him deceiving you from a very young age.
Yeah, it's the best life lesson, because that's what they're going to do for most of their life, so until they move out.
Start the deception early, like.
Yeah.
So the chances are then, right? So he could just start smoking, right? And you wouldn't notice. But if you had a City jersey on, you'd run amok.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Like when I was younger, and you'd have Bravo on in the round 5 away on the old NTL, badly done pawn or something behind you. Hear your ma coming up the stairs, and you'd knock her off ground as she was coming in. Phil's jumpless sitting in the bed with the City jersey, stuffed under the pillow before Phil comes in.
Surely, what about you, mate? Because obviously you've got a load of brothers. Was it a brotherly thing that was kind of passed on, and that was the rules of the household?
Yeah, Liverpool is big in my family. Like cousins of my mum, they lived in Liverpool. Cousins used to come over from Liverpool. All my brothers Liverpool fans. My uncles Liverpool fans. My dad, funny enough, is a sports fan, but he never forced that on us. But I hadn't a choice, even if I wanted one. I was like failed son to my brothers, you know what I mean? The funny thing is, like, one of my fours, and I 100%, James, I know the one. One of my first memories, I hate saying this, but it's the truth. One of my first memories as a football fan was the 1998 Champions League final. Solskjaer winning it, like
99.
That was one of, and that, like, that was one of, like, that's one thing I can remember what he was doing and where I was when that happened. But now Liverpool, all my, but like, get feeling now as a coach, like, he is now, Paddy does be on the show,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The others watch it, like, my cousin Albert does be watching in on the show, he's massive Liverpool, his dad, my uncle Joe, massive Liverpool. It's just been something that's always been in the family. And, like, it's not like my family is football mad. My brother Garrett was football mad. Keith, football mad. Alan, football mad. Paddy. So I kind of, I inherited it from them, really. I had no choice. You know what I mean? I had no choice. But I wouldn't have it any other way. And that'll be the same going forward. If I have any kids, if I have anything spawns from me, it'll be brainwashed from the minute it's able to understand.
Just get Phil around. Just get Phil to stand for them.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
But Jamie, look, I'm the oldest here by a long shot, right? And my earliest memory of Liverpool is back at the early 80s.
Is it a long shot? How old are you now?
I'm 44 now because I got my vaccine yesterday. So yeah, I'm 44. So my earliest memory of Liverpool is playing a European Cup match in 1981. Right, that's how far back we're going, and that's what got me addicted to Liverpool, because they were all red, right? And I remember Forest were playing in the European Cup around that time as well. And when Forest were playing as a kid, like, you, what Gav says, at 4 and 5, you just see red jerseys, and that's the team you support, right? That's, and so if another team is wearing all red jerseys, you thought they were Liverpool. I remember Forest were playing Liverpool in either a cup match or a league match or something like that. Liverpool were wearing all yellow, and I was cheering for the team that was in all red because they were Liverpool. And my dad was there going, no, we're in yellow today. And I was like, no, Dad, we wear red. Very red. And that's one of the earliest memories I have from supporting Liverpool. And the only reason I support them is because they were winning all the stuff. And 95% of kids are attracted to people lifting trophies and lifting cups. And we, okay, so you still have the father passing it on to the son, right? But it starts to lose it from that point on, because kids get attracted to being part of the team that's winning. Look at all those weird Blackburn Rovers fans that wander around Dublin at the moment, right? You see them. They're all about 36, right? But that's
they're
because
all Chelsea
they,
fans now.
They're all Chelsea fans, yeah, right? But again,
I actually know a Blackburn fan from 95 who's now a City fan.
Well, stop.
Genuinely.
How did he bridge that topic with you? Like, what did he
don't
say
know.
To you?
No, I don't. I knew him when I was younger. I don't really know him now, but I know I've seen him as a Man City fan. I'm going, what the fuck's going on there? You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You were like, Stuart Ripley was your hero, man. What's going on?
He's not one of these fellas who, he wears the City jersey that's 20 years old. Like,
oh, you love this thing.
The one with butter on it, Ardoidos. Like, they have the brand new spick and span jersey from 20 years ago.
Calls his dog Kitbacks. I know the one you're fan of.
Yeah, who's your favourite player? Oh, Sean Gouta, mate. I loved him as a kid.
Uwe Rosler.
Yeah, brand new 20-year-old jersey. I'm sure he's hanging around a long time.
Yeah, King Clancy on the back.
See, the thing that interests me, right, and Phil touched on it a little bit there, about the shiny new things, right? Is it a case, and was it the case for you guys in school? I mean, who was the most supported team at the time? Liverpool. Was it the team that was ultimately dominating trophies, which, you know, given the time, was Liverpool?
Interestingly enough, Jamie, at my age, it was still Liverpool and United. There's this huge thing in Ireland of Liverpool and United. Like, you'll have strange people who support Arsenal and Spurs and thing, but it was always, you were almost brainwashed into, you're meant to be a Liverpool and Celtic fan or a United and Celtic fan. Everyone's second team was basically Celtic. Now, mine isn't, but then again, I'm a weirdo, so that's all right. But like, that's what it was when I was growing up. And United weren't winning trophies, but they were always, say, second or third to Liverpool, if you know what I mean. So if your dad was a United fan, because he would have been a United fan from the 60s, the likelihood was you were then born into being a United fan. But the kids who don't have that strong influence of their father or uncles, like in Shawnee's case, and brothers in terms of what's there, they will drift towards the team that's winning the trophy. So you picked up all these Liverpool fans through the 70s and 80s and the late 60s, that because they were the team that was winning the trophies in England all the time. And that's what people were seeing in the papers back home in Ireland. It was Liverpool and Celtic, and that was it. And that, even to this day, you have all these fathers now who are passing that on to kids. So even when we were shite during the late 90s, noughties, and we weren't winning leagues, you still had this continuation of the Liverpool fans coming through. And now again, we're picking up the slackies because we've got all we're winning trophies. And again, it's attractive to the kids whose fathers are not necessarily big football fans, one way or the other.
It's funny because ever since I'll hold my hands up, I fully brainwashed my son. There's not something in this house that he doesn't own. If you ever look at my Instagram, he only wears Liverpool stuff. I mean, Mrs. goes absolutely mad. I fully brainwashed him. But ever since he got to an age where he cared, Liverpool literally won everything. So he's never, this is the first season now where he's like seeing a bit of adversity and he's like, hold on, this is not what it's cracked up to be. I'm not in for this.
Sign up for this.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing I'm really excited to be able to do is take him to his first game. And I want to come around the room and get a sense of that first experience for all of you, because I know the one thing that I remember is, you know, the walking up the steps and the moment you see the green for the first time and you're just like, wow, it doesn't feel real. Shawnee, can you remember your first game well?
Yeah. 08-09, freezing cold, shite game, Liverpool-Chelsea, and Torres scores twice with literally in the 89th and then an injury time. And that was my first time ever in Anfield. And like you said, I remember walking up the steps, seeing the grass, looking at the fans around, you're like going, holy Jesus. And at the time, like, trips to Anfield wasn't the most pleasant. Like, around the ground and all, it's not as you'd imagine. You know, as a kid, it wasn't the prettiest place to go, but as soon as you went inside, I was like going, holy Jesus. And that was it then. Like, that would have been at a stage where I was playing like in a Solar Cup in Liverpool with my football team at the time. That was the only reason why I was over there. Like, I wouldn't have been able to go to Liverpool on my own device then. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't, like, I was a kid. I couldn't just turn around to my man and say, I'm going on the boat and going over to the match. It's not like going over to Richmond Park to watch Pats. Mm. So it was a big thing. And ever since then, the bug, it's just a bug. And it never goes away. No matter how bad, like, because, like Phil was on there, like, through the people follow winners. When I was in school, it was hell for me because it was United fans all around me and they were winning everything, every year. And you'd have to listen to them. And it would be like, it was at the time, you just haven't won it in 20 years. And I was kind of going, what the fuck? Like, this is unbelievable. I put up with it during my whole teenage years. And then I see, like, Paddy's little fella was born. Ever since he's born, my winning league's like, you little bastard. Like, yeah.
You don't know how bad we had it.
Yeah, don't you go through the hardships I had to go through, you know what I mean? Like, the stuff that... But, yeah, the journey is always better than the destination. That's what they say. And I wouldn't change anything for any of it for anything, because it made the way all that sweeter. Everything when we got there just made it that bit more sweeter. And now, I was just getting used to us starting to win again this year, and this season went a bit mad again. So, Liverpool, even, I'm coming off my 30s now, have me emotional wreck. I'm no more emotionally intelligent now than I was when I was 14, 15 watching Liverpool. So, that just says a lot about what it's like to follow Liverpool.
Absolutely. Gav, can you remember your first game?
I can't. But the first game I can remember is the 86 Cup final. And people always say to you, I was just gone 4 years of age, a little over 4 years of age. People are asking what age I am. 39. Someone said 34 earlier. I was fucking delighted. but the first game I can remember, and people say, how the fuck do you remember that? The FA Cup back then was a huge thing on a Saturday of the Cup final day. It started at 9 o'clock on Grandstand, or whatever the fuck they called it, and it just went on watching and on and on. There was 6 hours of coverage. There was 6 hours of coverage before the game kicked off. So you're probably looking nearly 9 hours of coverage all in, and that's how I remember it. And I remember being with them said uncles again, and you know, and the green was stood out so much on the Wembley pitch, didn't it? And the red and blue, and you know, that's the first game I can remember. I think I'm nearly 15 before I get to Anfield. Yeah, I am. I'm 15 or 16, maybe. 97, 98. It's April 98. And it's a 2-0 win at home to Crystal Palace. Ivan Leonardson and I think David Thompson scores that day. And it's around the time of Hillsborough, because I remember the Palace fans being amazing around that. And like I said, I was in the Upper Centenary that day. Myself my dad actually brought me as a United fan. He brought me, and he was in the lower St. Henry. I was in the upper St. Henry, and you went up near the Anfield Road end. And like you all said, I went to, you, at the time you went in the St. Henry stand, and you had the big glass door. I remember the big glass doors and the Bob Paisley, Bill Shankly, suites and stuff like that. Up, you get your free program and all that. And like you say, you come up the step, you walk out, and you look, and you go, "Fucking hell," you know. And the one thing I would say is, it doesn't. When you get into, for anyone that hasn't been in Anfield or anyone that has, and I don't know if you feel the same, when you walk in, it is amazing, but it doesn't look as big as you thought it was going to be. So when I walked into Anfield, I went, amazing, but that's just a normal pitch. Like, why isn't it like way bigger looking like when you see it on the telly? Because
it is a tight pitch though, compared to, you know, if you look like the likes of Old Trafford or whatever, where I always think is massive. Anfield is quite tight.
Yeah, it is quite tight. And and like Sean, you said, I remember being there in 98 and, you know, Liverpool was in an awful state. You know, like if you go down where Albert Dock is now and along the Strand there, and you see the way it's all laid out and it's beautiful.
Transformed.
And you turn up the hill and you can head to Liverpool One. I remember going by there because you'd come by there on the way to your hotel or whatever. And, you know, the sides of the road kind of had these embankments, kind of concrete embankments going up each side. And the concrete was falling away and there was weeds growing. It was not a nice place. And to see the transformation over the years is unbelievable. So yeah, 86 Cup Final, my first one I can remember. First one I was at was 98, April 98, I think it was. Someone might double check that, but it's definitely Palace. It's definitely Ivan Leonardson scoring, and I'm nearly sure David Thompson at the cop end.
It's funny you say about the Dock Road, because whenever, I haven't been able to go home for a while for obvious reasons, but whenever I go home, I have to drive through the Dock Road, and that's that one moment where I kind of look around and I'm like, I'm back home, and it never leaves me to this day. Phil, what's your first game before I go around the room and get an idea of which players' posters you had on your wall?
So mine's a bit weird. So the first time I was in Anfield wasn't for a match, right? I just buzzed over to Liverpool for a weekend away with my mate, and we stayed in the Formula One motel.
Oh, yeah.
Down, it's almost facing the Royal Iver buildings, right? And it must have been about like 50 pence for a night in the room. It was like this, the room was made like the inside.
The
of
Ibis
ship.
Was beside it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like if you couldn't afford the Ibis, you stayed in the Formula One. So that tells you how classy it is, right? It's basically, there was no seats, there was no tables. There was basically ledges like the inside of an airplane in the room where you put things on. There was no seats, it was a bed. But listen, it worked. It was, as I said, 50 pence for the night. I remember going into BHS and being able to get a breakfast for about 12 pence as well. So that was great. And this was in modern money times. This isn't like the 70s or anything like that. So it was just door cheap. It must have been the end of June. So it was proper like out of season. So we just buzzed up to the Anfield. Just to do a club tour. I just wanted to go up and see it with no fans and just to take it in, because you could do the trophy room, you could do everything like that, right, in terms of what it was, and get a feel for what the stadium looked like when there was nobody there and you don't have that emotion running around you, you know, for a football match. I just like to take in just to really soak up stadiums. I love visiting stadiums.
Did they still do the crowd noise then, Phil, at that point when you walk down the steps?
Jamie, I honest to God now, it's probably longer. I was probably alive less amount of years than it is the amount of years since I was there when I did this. So it's a bit hard. The Alzheimer's is kicking in here, right? So like, I can't remember exactly if the crowd noise, I think it might have been, but like, I just remember walking out onto the pitch, and the first thing that got to me was, how the fuck can they not take proper corners? That's the only thing that got to me. I looked at it and I went, how have we spent 10
Some
years?
Some crack on a weekend, that's how you are.
How have we spent 10 years looking at fellas not being able to take a decent corner in this pitch? Look how close the corner, it's almost a penalty to take a corner into that. There's no way hitting the force man all the time. That's ridiculous. I was saying, look at this. This is ridiculous. I can forget that. So that was the but I remember it's the green. It's that greenness of the pitch that really stands out to me. It's like, and again, it's that eye trick, because it's a red, because all the seats in the stadium are red and the pitch is green. It's so vivid when you set the two against each other, that it really stands out. And I think for an awful lot of visiting fans that come over to away games and stuff, that's part of, they don't even think about it, but that's part of the, oh, wow, look at this. It's a visual thing. Even if you go early, you see those red seats with this green pitch, and it's just so vivid to the eyes, because when you go get your eyes tested, you always put the green and red things there. It's the two most standout colours that the eyes can recognise, and it really brings that sort of vibrancy towards it. First match then, Jesus, I was late going because, and I was late going to my first match mainly because I played so much football myself. I refused to go away at the weekends. And of course, when you're playing at the same time as the matches, you never get to go across. And I was a goalkeeper, so I refused to get dropped. So I didn't want to give any excuse to more than my own form to get myself dropped. So when I did go over, I think about the first game I probably saw was, and I was fairly drunk. So this is the problem. You can ask Steve about this as well. We used to organise buses over to the games, and we'd start drinking at 6:30 in the morning on the bus. And the game would be, the game would be kicking off at 3:30, and before you even got on the bus, before you got on the boat, like, you were locked. So by the time you got off the boat, you were bananas drunk, right? So the one that sticks out in my mind is we went to the Wigan match. I'll cut clean on this one, right? Because it's the one that really sticks out in my mind, right? So we went to the Wigan match, and we were in the cop, and I was in the second row of the cop, right? It's that section of seats that's just to the right-hand side of the goal. And we were playing Wigan, and Rafa was there at the time. Or was it Rafa? I can't remember. It was. No, maybe it wasn't. I can't remember. Anyway, say it was. Could have been Rogers. I don't know who it was. Somebody was managing us at that stage.
Kout, was it? Is that the big game? Kout scored.
It could have been, right? I can't remember. We win 3-1 anyway, right? So, but anyway, or 3-0. Or something happened. But anyway, the first half, we're so drunk, right? One of the lads had to carry me through the barriers, you know, to get into the ground, right? I couldn't stand. And we get into the cop, and we're sitting there. And anyway, look, something happened in the game. I think Callum McMenamin broke his leg or something like that, right? And that was enough for me. That just basically set me off into a nice little slumber. So, and that was around about the 16th minute. So I managed to fall asleep in the front part of the cop, right? And it was a time when the LFC TV website was taking pictures of the crowd as well, right?
I know where this is going.
So there's pictures. So you used to be able to go on to the picture and find out if you were in the ground, you could zoom into any part that you're sitting in and you could see where you were sitting, right? But whenever they took the picture, it was as Daniel Agger was jumping to take a header at the back end, and his leg had actually blocked me off being asleep in the crowd, right? So there was no photographic evidence. But there's another one where you can see me between his legs, and I'm white as a ghost. And I'm telling you now, I'm as white as Sean's t-shirt. It must have been about 47 minutes. And like literally sitting there like a corpse. Half time, pop back up. This is great, lads. What's going on? What score is it, right? The disgust. When I tell you the disgust of the lads in the cop at the fact that I was there, oh, it was brilliant. Then I went off and got a couple of Carlsberg and came back. Great second half. We won. We scored 3 goals. I didn't miss anything in the first half. I got everything in the second half. So that must
be a Trippers thing, because the last time we were over there, we went on a Friday. I don't know whose idea it was. First game of the season, wasn't it?
It was first game of 18-19 at home to West Ham, and we went on the Saturday morning. We are coming back on the Sunday night, and we are playing West Ham at 1:30 on the Sunday, and we went mental on the Saturday. Like,
it was a 14 hour shift before kickoff, right?
The earliest fella getting in that night was 5 a.m, I think. And we had to be out of room at 10.
The worst part was, whatever way it was, me and Paddy were sitting together in the lower Kenny. And Steve-O and Nilo were together in
the Anfield Road End.
Upper Anfield Road End. But I sat in the seats that they were in before, because the tickets belonged to a mate of mine, so I knew exactly where the seats were. And about 20 minutes into the game, I looked up into the corner, and Steve was pinned against the wall, and he's like that. And he was beside him. And the only way I can describe it was, do you remember in PES 2005, the crowd, by the way, the crowd, they're cutouts, but they just shift like that. They're not actually moving. Yeah. They're just programmed to look like they were moving. Yeah. The boys look like two cardboard cutouts up in the stand, right? But the best part, you got 1-0 up. I think it's either Mane or Salah gets the goal, right? And everyone's celebrating, and everyone's Salah. And I look up, and Steve-O just goes, about 20 seconds after everyone else, I swear the ground was absolutely boiling. Swell.
Boiling. It's the hottest I've ever been in a game because we left on the Saturday morning on a 7 o'clock flight. We went into Liverpool. The first thing Steve wanted to do was have what's that fancy fucking egg thing you saw? Eggs Benedict. Right? Ridiculous. So just to give you, sorry, Jamie, we're ray rolling this, but Steve wants to get that. So they all go off, right? And they're getting that. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Me and Nilo walks down into the town. I was getting money. Neil was getting something else. And we went and done that. We came back. Nilo tried to offer, Nilo offered Johnny 20 quid on a pair of Astro Runners if he'd go in my place and play against the Anfield Rap because he wanted to bring me for a pint of Guinness and a bacon sandwich for a fiver. We had a few points after that. We went absolutely mental that night. Like, it was madness. People were buying stuff in chippers. I'm not even remember it, and claiming people were breaking into their rooms and leaving chippers in their room and all. But the next morning, I remember going, Steve booked a haircut, but I remember the next morning going up to the, He booked a haircut. But I remember going up to the...
I'm just going to cut you off here real quick. Be very careful because there's a incriminating stuff went on in that lane.
This is grand. So we went to what's that hotel on the Anfield Road? Was it Hotel Tia? We went there. It's called Taggies or something else now. Is it, I think. But Steve was that bad that he said to me, I'll go to the bar. I know it's my round. I'll go to the bar. But please don't make me buy you a drink. And I went, Steve, up there. He said, I'm getting a can of Coke. I said, well, get me two bottles then. I'll drink your own. And Steve was in bits. But Nilo was sitting on a bench. And there was this old couple. They're about 70. And it was a bench. But Nilo just went and sat in between the two of them. And these two couple, this couple are just looking at each other. And we're like, Nilo, yeah, right. And he's like, yeah, grand, gone. But me, Joe, and Davo were in the cup, and it was the hottest I've ever been.
Oh, it was like, so warm.
It was so fucking hot, and we were just, the sweat was pouring off us, and I was using Paddy Lawson's hoodie as a fucking towel. And but yeah, what a day that, what a weekend that was. It was unbelievable.
I know. Can you imagine when we actually get to go do it? And because I think did I come over for one of them? And I joined very, very late.
You turned up in Batman Forever at about 2 a.m. We were all out of our face.
Remember being Batman Forever when he comes through the ceiling? That's why you were like, late substitution. 114 minute. I turned around at 2 a.m. and Jamie's fresh as a bleeding dice going around the place. What is going on here?
Yeah, you were all in the heat, to be honest. I'll make sure I'm there earlier next time.
Jamie, you see that the boar put up X in the city, right? I have a small story about that because this is
was that you that put that up there? Because I definitely didn't click that up. I was like, where's that?
That was me.
Was that you, Gav?
Straight up, right? And I'm not lying about this. We were almost sponsored by X in the City for a while, right? we had a sponsorship deal. Honestly, Nilo got in contact with them. I'm not even lying about this, right? And he agreed everything, right? I didn't know about this at the time because this is going way back.
I've called the dance with the discount code Trippers.
Oh my god! And I was like, "What? What?" It's like he goes, "Have a sorted, Phil. Have a sorted." I got a big, big, big sponsorship deal. I was like, "What?" Was, yeah, big place in Liverpool. Great. When we get over there, we get discounts and everything. I was like, "Nilo, what is this? Sounds great. What is it? X in the City." I was like, "What?" You know the big strip club? We go in there and it'd be grand. It'd be great when we're all over there. It's grand. And I'm going to pay us loads of money. I was like, Nilo, a strip club sponsoring a podcast. I know it might sound like a great idea, but if we actually want to crack loads of markets, this may not be the right way to go about it. And I still have the contract and everything had drawn up with him. Nilo. So the best thing to learn about there is never send Nilo out to try sell anything for you because God knows who's going to end up buying your product. Like it's very dangerous. But yeah, that's how X and the City came back to mind in terms of what was there.
Wow.
I could tell a story about that, but it's something we'd have to probably put behind the paywall.
The paywall, yeah.
Yeah. I'll just say one thing. I seen a fella in a wheelchair getting carted out there by security because he said something to him. Because he said something to one of the dancers.
Right, get away from this quick.
Yeah.
What were you saying about posters?
I got thrown out because I was laughing at what he said to the dancers.
You got chucked out as well.
for laughing.
I got thrown out because I was laughing at the word he said.
Jeez. I tell you what, lads, we went off on Liverpool, some tangent there.
Hey, Liverpool is some city. This is all about Liverpool stories. What a city, by the way. I can't wait to go back.
Oh, I'm dying for it. Absolutely dying for it. You can't go wrong. Like, and when you know people over there and you can just ring them and go, we're on our way, and they go, yeah, no problem. The best man for it is John Gibbons off the Anfield Rap. Literally just tell him what pub you're going to be in at any time, and he's just there. He just appears, and he's like, and it doesn't matter. He could be on his lunch break, right? This fella could be on his lunch break, and you go, I'll be in O'Neill's in a half an hour, and he's there. And you look 5 hours later, and he's still fucking sitting with you. I'm out for the night now, which is, that's it. He's the best.
Mohamed Yogi's at the point in the comment there, and it is along them marks. It's along that line.
Right, okay.
So posters on walls, lads.
Yeah.
I'll go with that then. So, obviously, you was at Jammy Bastards. Like, you would have had Barnes, Rush. Like, you was followed Liverpool when it was front to back world class players, but the one who really drew me in as a kid to spawn, and I hate saying it because he turned out to be a little Judas fucker, was Michael Owen. Michael Owen was my idol. He's the fella had bleeding. He had N64, Nintendo 64 games and all, World Star Soccer. Michael Owen had his own game. He was winning Ballon d'Ors. I think he was 21. He was ripping her up in the Premier League, ripping her up at World Cups. And everyone wanted to be Michael Owen. Now, I was a lanky umfla, so I was never a Michael Owen. You know, I wasn't a little small fella with pates, but I still always wanted the Umbro boots because remember he used to wear Umbro.
Yeah.
And the 0-0-01 season, Jesus, the cup final against Arsenal, just unbelievable stuff. Like, he was so good, Michael Owen, and he blew up at Leeds and it was never the same since after that. But I remember having the white Reebok jersey with number 10 and all on the back of it. He was the first sort of idol I had in football. Obviously, there was Ronaldo, but Michael Owen, watching him growing up, Jesus Christ, he was unbelievable. And he was a local lad as well, which I always find, you always favour the lads who you feel it means more to. Like, you look at Trent now, the local lads, you always feel like it means more to them. And for a local lad to be winning the most prestigious awards individual world football when Michael Owen was just electric, and like Mbappe captivates the kids now, he was the one where I thought, Jesus Christ, I'd love to be like Michael Owen.
Yeah, you couldn't. It was the definition of breaking on the scene with him. Mm. He was just fearless, wasn't he? You know, big goals, big moments. You think of the Argentina goal for England, you know, in the biggest stage. And it's mad in a way because, like you say, he wins the Ballon d'Or, yet isn't really, for whatever reason, isn't spoken about too fondly and kind of held in the higher esteem that his ability probably should have had. And Phil, who was the players that kind of stood out for you and kind of captured your imagination when you were a kid?
See, posters were huge back in my day because I was a shoot reader. So shoot was huge. And I actually had the edition of shoot that came out for April Fool's Day that had Ian Rush. The Everton gear on. But what people forget about that, if you flipped it over the other side, I can't remember, it might have been Graham Sharp in the Liverpool kit, but it was a double-sided. So you could, depending on which way it was in the newsagent, it was either somebody from a different team, and then everyone knows it as Ian Rush in the Everton kit. probably from, like, team back, like, it was really team posters, loads of team posters up the wall and the crown paints and candy kits, right? That sticks in my mind. But I had a lot of, Ian Rush was on nearly all the posters because he was scoring all the goals. And then when he went buggered off to Juventus, John Aldridge came up. But like, Jan Mulby was probably my favourite player growing up. Just not necessarily the best player, but just whenever you used to watch him, he used to just dazzle you. He used to stand there, not move around the pitch, but just ping balls left, right, and centre. Very, very strange to see a player like that at the time, because I would have remembered Souness before he left. But up, after that was Steve McMahon, like doing all the stuff that we look at players now and praise them for, like doing what Henderson does in terms of that up and down the pitch, non-stop donkeys, and making it all work for everyone else around him. You had Spackman, he was brilliant in centre midfield for as well. But you had Ronnie Whelan. People forget how good Ronnie Whelan was as a centre midfielder. But Jan Mulby was always, I just adored Jan Mulby. I just loved the way he played in the centre of the park. And he was just that, he was bigger than the rest of the players around him. And in every way, his girth, everything was just bigger about him. He just looked different to the players on the pitch. And when Gav was talking about the 86 FA Cup final, the thing that everyone always remembers, Rush's headers, but it was Jan Mulby's passing and his ability to pick out a pass that made the whole final.
And do you know what it is? And sorry to cut across you, but Jan Mulby is one of my favourites as well from that era. But if you go back and watch the 86 Cup final and the tour goal, Jan Mulby nicks it through someone's legs and you hear Motton say, "Oh, I say," and he continues on the sentence, "Oh, I say," and he continues on the I'm showing my age now because I actually forget the rest of the sentence, right? And every couple of years, I genuinely go and find the actual commentary because it used to be on, the History of Liverpool used to have on VHS. Right, it was the best VHS ever fucking made. Like, I'm talking, it was so fucking good. I knew every single word of it. But that little bit where it drops in midfield and Mulby just takes a touch and nicks it through a fella's legs, and I think it might be Whelan runs onto it. It is Whelan that runs onto it. Dalglish makes his decoy run and he gives it the rush. But that little bit of commentary, he says something else after, and I always forget it every couple of years and go back, and I'm going to do it tonight now. I'm going to go back and find that little bit of commentary.
Yeah, Jan was immense. But like the posters I would have had would have been the obvious ones. You would have had Aldridge, you had Bearsley, you had loads of Johnny Barnes posters. Loved Barnes. Like, Barnes was just, what people don't understand was back then, we've talked about this in the pub before, football was local. Right. So every league in the world was primarily a local league. That's why the FA Cup mattered back then. That's why the World Cups mattered back then. That's why European Championships mattered back then. And that's why they don't matter now, because football is global at this stage. Right. So the best competition is the Champions League, because that's where teams assemble the best players on the planet to combat against each other. Back then, leagues were leagues. So when Liverpool went off to play in the European Cup, they were primarily English or British-based players, and I'll even include the Irish in this, that went off to represent that league in Europe, right? The Italians were primarily Italian teams that went and represented Italy in the thing, famed the French and the Spanish teams and all that type of stuff. But that changes in the 90s and just changes the way football. I know you've got questions about this later on, but like at that stage, that's what you were looking at. As a young Irish player, as a young Irish footballer, you could dream about playing for Liverpool. You had Ronnie Whelan, you had Jim Beglin, you had Steve Staunton when he came through. You had, you looked up to Mark Lawrenson. You know, we had Ray Houghton. We had these players that were in the best team in Europe. Don't mind like possibly the best team in the world, even though what happened after Heysel prevented us from playing in Europe. But we had this team that we had idols that we could look up to. It's so few and far between because we are this multicultural team and this global team that now exists, and that's the way football has gone. But that's why when I talk about the FA Cup and I think back then, it means something. It means nothing to me now, but it means something then.
Look at I was 0-0-0-1. Like the UEFA Cup, that was huge then. Mm-hmm. The UEFA Cup was huge. Like that was a big thing then. And FA, like Gav was saying, like even up until the Gerrard final, the FA Cup was a whole day thing. Started at 12 and it went on, but and there wouldn't have been another game on that day. Like, it's not like now. It's not like the FA Cup is thrown in between two Premier League games now. That would have been the only game on that Saturday.
The FA Cup was on 3 o'clock at Saturday, and I swear to God, BBC started at 9 in the morning. I don't care anyone says.
ITV did as well. St. and Greaves used to be on, and they'd start the coverage, rival coverage going on non-stop. You would have had BBC Sport. What was he used to? Grandstand. Used to start early. Grandstand. Used to start early. They stopped the kids' programs like Live and Kicking to start Grandstand early on FA Cup day, and the same on ITV. Number 73 used to be axed, and they stick on Saint and Greasy from early doors at 9:30 in the morning, and away you go.
You are obviously all out of me. Like, I remember how I used to have to wait to see the goals. Like, one of my earliest memories was Reese's free kick against United. That was the 0-0-1 season, that rocket of a free kick, and you used to sit there on, I think it was CFAX 318, and it used to have all the fixtures up on the screen, and there was, the screen would literally refresh every 5 minutes, and you'd have to see if the score changed, and then you'd have to wait until the 6 o'clock news then to see the goals, right?
You wouldn't have
WhatsApp. You wouldn't text you. You'd have to literally wait and see. You'd listen to it on the radio, and then you'd hear, and then you'd wait until the 6 o'clock news to see the goals. And that was what it was like. You used to literally sit there with words on a screen, because in my gaff, we didn't have Prem Plus, because Prem Plus was a thing then. Remember, you used to have to pay for the big game on the weekend. It was a pay-per-view. Sky used to have the big Premier League game on the weekend as a pay-per-view, and you'd be sitting there waiting for the screen to refresh, and then the only way you got to see the bleeding was the highlights was then at 6 o'clock, and then you get four of our highlights then at Match of the Day, and that was football.
We only had Match of the Day. We only had Match of the Day.
That's why
we didn't. You're wrong. We had RT2 football coverage on a Saturday. You couldn't get that in England. They used to have delayed coverage. But
they used to show RTE used to show the Saturday games at 3:30. Do you remember? The 3 o'clock kickoff would go live at 3:30. So Liverpool could be playing. I remember Liverpool beating Leeds 5-4 at Elland Road, and the fucking thing came on at 3:30, tipped off at 3:30. It was half an hour old. Liverpool were about 4-0 up in real time. John Barnes absolutely annihilated Leeds, but stuff like that. But I always remember it was the game was on. You used to go up and get the paper, the late edition of the Herald, and it used to be in pink with all the football results on the back of it. And then you get Match of the Day that night. And I think the pink is a thing that goes around. I think Liverpool had the same thing.
The pink echo, yeah.
Yeah. The pink Herald was the same on a Saturday evening at about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And you get it and all the details.
In Italy is the same, and it still is now. Their post-football results on a Saturday is still pink as opposed to...
deadly. That's deadly. So, like, some things should never die. I think things like that should always exist. Like, I remember on a Saturday, getting up on a Saturday morning, and there was a thing on the telly called Trans War Sport. Remember that? It used to show you highlights from it. And then after that then was on Channel 4, James Richardson's Serie A review. And you used to sit there, you know, watching like Inter Milan with Ronaldo, Rakobe, all these players, and you'd be blown away. And you'd literally be only seeing 3 minutes of these games. It'd be just showing you goals. And you'd be seeing Ronaldo.
You'd be completely blown away.
Like,
you won't remember.
Barry Devney sitting there, James Richardson, are we sitting out in the middle of Rome or Milan having a coffee, reading the pink paper?
Do you know, Ireland was one of the first countries to get the Italian highlights earlier than anyone else, because Italy's games predominantly were played on a Sunday, and on a Monday night on Network 2, or RT2 as it's known now, they used to have the Italian football show. And they used to show all the highlights of Italian football at 9:30 on a Monday night on Network 2, as it was known then. Before anyone else, it was mental.
Gav, I'm going to show me real age, because Sean, I don't even know if you were born for this one, right? But we used to have, if you had a few quid in Dublin, you used to get cable link, right? So this is going even before Joe's internet, before NTL and UPC, right? This is the forerunner was cable link. So you got a firm of cable link television. But Supersport used to have Dutch football highlights on from 87 to 89 season, right? And that was my introduction to Marco van Basten. I've been asked this many times. I've never seen a better centre-forward than Marco van Basten in my life. And I think because that was at the time I saw the overhead goal he scores against, I think it's NEC Nijmegen or Groningen. It's one of those two that he scores again. But you used to get to watch this Dutch lad do the highlight. It was the best programme. I used to sit up religiously and watch this programme. And like, this was my introduction. Because back then, it's not like now, people don't get it. Anyone that's been born in the 90s and has grew up with football in the noughties, right, don't understand that football wasn't 24-7. Television wasn't 24-7 in the 80s. You got the big match on ITV on a Sunday, and you got the FA Cup on
the BBC.
But
it wasn't every Sunday.
No, it used to be every second Sunday, and there was a fight over television rights that took football off television for the best part of 7 months at one stage. There's the famous Jan Mulby goal against United that was lost for 15 years. People hadn't seen this goal where he ran through the whole United team.
Yeah, it was in some Owen's attic.
Yeah, they lost it.
There was a video of it in some Owen's attic.
And the only reason it was
cameras taped over Coronation Street or something.
The club had their own cameras doing it, Sean. Like, the
second half of the game is some young fella's skill and nativity play in Liverpool was on the second half of the game.
Fear of Duck were talking to Mike Baldwin.
What's this? Look at your man running through the United team and scoring this absolute blinder from the 20.
Honest to God, the story is that was actually a video that was found in an attic somewhere. That's the truth behind it. Sorry, Jamie, we've gone off on another tangent.
No, it's good. And you naturally came to my next point, which was around, I suppose, do you think the lack of access to football back in the day helped build the excitement then? Because I suppose your relationship with football changes as you're a fan, and obviously as you grow up. Do you think, Shawnee, it kind of changed for you as a fan, the fact that, you know, we see football every day of the week now if we want to. If the fact that you had to sit there and watch teletext and wait till 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock at night to watch goals, it helped build up that excitement and capture the imagination.
Absolutely, because you never took it for granted. Well, you never ever took it for granted that if there was a FA Cup game on BBC, you'd watch it. Doesn't matter who was playing.
Yeah.
You are watching live football. So you'd watch it. So it could have been anybody. Like, you know what I mean? It could have been Aston Villa and United. It could have been absolutely anybody. You'd never turn down the chance to watch live football. And that's why the World Cup was so special, because there was three games on every day. And it was like the war, like,
remember the wall charts you'd get from the newspaper and everything? You're trying to work out.
It used to come around. It was a festival of football. Like, I remember the 2002 World Cup. And, like, yous are jammy bastards. Yous had Italian 90 on USA.
Italian 90
like,
was the best thing ever.
Like, yous had that. But now listen, and USA 94. And I remember a 9-year-old I was, summer 2002. Everyone's putting flags up, hanging buntings out, and I'm going, what's going on here? And my ma's putting buntings up in the front garden, and they were like, Ireland are in the World Cup, and you're waking up before you go to school, and England are playing Brazil, and Ronaldinho was loving Schmeichel. Your mind was blown, because football is on all day. You're watching the best players play all the time. I remember France 98. Remember being heartbroken because Ronaldo lost in the final. Remember, like, that was what football was all about. You were starved of it. You were starved of it. So when it came on, you were like, gee, I'm going to engulf myself and all of this. Like, 2002 World Cup, I think I watched every single game as a 10-year-old. And when I wasn't watching it, I was across the road kicking ball around playing World Cup, Bagsy and being Brazil, Bagsy and being Ronaldo. Like, that's what football was all about. To me, it's completely different. Like, the Euro start on Friday, and kids will be on their Xboxes playing bleeding Fortnite. If that was a 10-year-old Sean, you'd be filling out your wall chart, Jamie.
Yeah.
After every game, putting the results on.
Well, the World Cup 2002 to go way off the point. My brother was doing the leaving cert, and I can't remember what game we were playing, but I think it was middle of the day.
It was Germany, Gav.
Yeah, he had two exams.
Paddy was on the way up the road to go to school. Robbie Keane's at the scoring. Everyone was out on the road running around. It was fucking madness.
My brother had done an exam in the morning and just flew through it to get down the pub. And I think he had 5 pint bottles of Bulmers and went back and done his English paper too then after the match. but like you're talking about excitement, Jamie, like, and what, because of the access, I think that's a huge point, because, you know, I'm watching since 86, and, you know, Hillsborough comes along and to watch Dalglish after Hillsborough, I think to me is still disturbing to me. But John Barnes was it. John Barnes was, he's the best player to ever play at Liverpool. I don't care what anyone says. But then when you watch Beardsley with him, Aldridge with him, the players he had around him. And then McManaman was huge for me. He comes in 90, 91-ish.
Yeah.
And even then, the Cavalier, Patrick Berger, everyone was going on about Poborski in Euro 96, and Berger rocks up, long hair, hairband, bashing goals in against Leicester on his debut and stuff. You were talking about posters on walls, and I had so many of them. But I always remember it was getting the jerseys was the big thing, Jamie. Like, now, you know, I could say now we're giving away a jersey, someone will win it, and I can order here now and get it, and it's at the house tomorrow or the next day. But at the time, getting Liverpool jerseys was huge. You know, I remember the black 93, 94. I remember all the little liverboards on it and getting Fowler 23 on the back of it with the Adidas numbers. And that was a huge deal. I remember the green and white squared one in 95, 96. You couldn't get it in Dublin. You could not get it. My ma got the last one in Marathon Sports on Grafton Street. I'll never forget. She got the last one. Yeah, yeah. And that was the thing, Jamie, because you didn't have the access and there was no internet and checking up transfers. You had less, but it meant so much more, if you know what I mean. You didn't have all that access. It wasn't 24/7 on you. And it meant more. Them little snippets you got meant a whole lot more, because getting a jersey or getting a tracksuit or even someone, your uncle going to Anfield and bringing you home a programme. you know.
Yeah.
It was huge. And you treasured those sort of things. I still have programs upstairs in the attic. I still have jerseys. I've given loads of jerseys away to younger relations now because I feel that why should they be in the attic? Let them go and wear them. My daughter has the 87, 88 home red that she will not give away to nobody. She says, that's mine. And she probably knows it's worth a few quid, you know what I mean? But but the access thing is a huge point because we have so much access to it now. And it's just on us all the time. And a jersey means, not that it means nothing, you know, everyone likes a new jersey. But back then, Jamie, I remember that Fowler one. I remember the green and white one. 95 with the big cricket or rugby collar, whatever they called it. Stan Collymore only signed. You know, it was so different then. And even what, you didn't even get to see a game and you had to wait for a match of the day. There was so much more to it. It excited you a lot more. And the excitement was a lot more natural, I felt.
I know where Phil is going because when if Phil is ever in...
He's been sitting on his hands dying to comment there for ages.
I know where Phil is going with this because if Phil is ever in a bad spot, there's one word and two numbers that you have to say and he just literally bursts into a glee. It's like opening Pandora's box and Phil just becomes that. He's gonna say Mexico 86.
Are you all right to do this?
I am. No, Shawnee, it's not even Mexico. And I've said this previously. 86 was the pinnacle of old school football, right? And I call old school football is from 70 right the way through. So the sort of origination of the modern day game happens in the 1970 World Cup with that Brazilian team because that's the force that you have colour on the television screens. Everyone thinks of that World Cup in colour. You think of the way the Brazilian teams play, pass and move. That's where the modern game sort of arrives in terms of what we look at. But 86 was the culmination of the forced cycle of that modern game, which is you have everything going on. And in England, Liverpool win the double, right? So when you take that year as a year in itself, it was also the first time that the tournament is broadcast. Every game in that tournament is broadcast on terrestrial television, both in England and in Ireland. Up until then, you didn't have every game, but they broadcast every game then at that point, right? And you had the dual coverage on UTV or ITV and BBC at that time. There was no Channel 4. You've got to remember, there's no Channel 4 back then. You've basically got UTV, BBC 1, BBC 2, that's it, right? So in Ireland, we had RT1 and RT2. RT2, for the first time broadcast, I think John Giles and Bill O'Herlihy were the only coverage on it, right? They didn't have Eamon Dunphy. So you have you had Dunphy and you had O'Herlihy. You didn't have Giles at that stage. It was Dunphy who wanted to bring Giles onto it. So you have this very different world of football. Analysis wasn't what we get nowadays. It wasn't overanalyzed. People were describing what they were seeing on television. Jimmy Greaves was on, and it was the same at Match of the Day. They just literally described what they're saying, and this was a great ball here, and it was a great header, and well done to the fella, and that was fantastic.
Big round of applause.
Big round, well done. What did you think there, Jimmy?
Handshakes all round.
And look at how hard he was in the tackle, but unfortunately, it just didn't go in. That's the way it is. So you had this, there was an honesty to it. It wasn't overkill because they didn't have time to overkill. Now we've got weeks of programs and days of programs filling up the air where it's over analysis in terms of what it is, right? But that was the cycle. From 86 onwards, you have then the gradual change in the games. I believe the last great World Cup was 98. I genuinely do. If we weren't, if Ireland weren't in the 2002 World Cup, it wouldn't have the same sense for us because of everything that went on with Saipan and the Cameroon game and all that type of stuff, right? If you strip that away, 98 was the last truly great World Cup that was held. And it's also about the last time that we have a non-globalized version of the game. From the 90s onwards, you have this football. It's 24/7. You have Sky Sports. You have the beginning of all of what we see as which is now the second cycle. The 90s is this transition period from the old football, the old school game, to the modern game. And from the 90s onwards to where we are, that's what we have. It's been the gradual build-up of 24/7 coverage. And then you've got social media. You've got everything that's on about what's there, right? But 86 for me is the purest. And if you can get a chance, if people get a chance to go back and watch it, it's football is mad. The games in that are mind-blowing. The Brazil-France game to this day has changed my life. It changed my life as a child, that Brazil-France game. And watching John Barnes in the build-up to that World Cup in terms of the game that he plays, because he kept showing Barnes in the highlight reel about what he did to Brazil in Rio with the England team, right? And you have that goal he scores. And then in 1987, he signs for Liverpool. For me, as a Liverpool, that was the first time a transfer was exciting. I was signing this player that I'd watched play for England, and I'm an Irish. Even at that stage, I knew I hate England. I was Irish, like, do you know what I mean? We were cheering for Scotland in the 86 World Cup, and cheering for Northern Ireland, even Northern Ireland, anyone that put England. But when John Barnes came on, it was electric, and you watched him play, and he wasn't English. He was a Brazilian player. In your head, he was this Brazilian player.
He was so fucking good.
So different to everything we've ever seen, right, on our televisions. And, like, we hadn't seen a George Best. We hadn't seen that type of player. So this was what it was. And genuinely, I swear, if they can go back and watch the 86, it's just a Yossi Mar's goal. You're right, Sean. I get emotional when it comes to it. But Yossi Mar's goal stands out. He runs down the sideline and bends this outrageous corner over Pat Jennings of all goalkeepers, and goes in the side netting. And he just runs around with the hands aloft, going, whoa. It was like you'd never seen it. It's the coverage.
Even the way the old lads used to celebrate. just shaking their hands and throwing Robin in there. You weren't doing that.
Yeah, when you look at Paolo, it was a Paolo Rossi in the 82 World Cup, gets the hat trick. Wasn't it Paolo Rossi?
Yeah,
and he literally scores and runs off. It's one of the most famous celebrations. He just runs hands in the air, doesn't know what to falls to.
What's his name? Rosso does it in the semi final against Jamie, you remember?
Yeah, exactly. But
he done the exact same thing.
But Jamie, that to me, that's where football in my heart is born, and that's where it's always rested. When I go back, as Sean says, everyone has that moment as a child that they fully have embraced football as the game, and that's all they want to do. I was wearing a Maradona number 10 jersey from O'Neill's, because O'Neill's used to make knockoff kits all the time, right? And we were playing the Drimley Road Leagues, and our team won it. And the winners, and it was the Drimley Mini Leagues. Eddie O'Neill, very famous, he set up Ben Madigan United, right?
Legend, absolute legend of the
football game over here. Me and Peter Smith.
He's actually mates with Jose Mourinho. That's a fact.
That is a fact. And so me and Peter Smith were on the same team. Obviously, everyone knows Pete that's on this. So we were on the same team growing up. Loads to John Bosco to walks, right? But that's what we won. We won a choice of our O'Neill's jersey. So you could either get the yellow Brazil one, which had Zico 10, right? Or Maradona 10. And this was the first time we'd seen names and the numbers on the back of the jerseys, right? And, like, this is it. This is the blossoming of a young kid. I was 1986. I was 9. So you know that age where you've become aware of football, and then you just embrace it, and it becomes your passion. It encompasses everything. I still have the 1986 Panini sticker book. That's what I have, right? I have
the best sticker book of all time was the Italian 90 one. It was
Italian 90. Oh.
It was like, did you ever see the barristers walking into court with the fucking trolleys of all the evidence? This thing needed a trolley. It was absolutely humongous, Italian 90. If anyone wants a VHS of the 82 official World Cup, I have it in the attic. Just to remember that.
You saw it, the Anne Mulby goal.
Yeah. Or
so
Anne
we
Frank.
Spoke about Some... things, right? So we spoke about things, obviously, that have stood in your memory for obviously positive reasons, and when you kind of your imagination was captured. A question I want to throw to you is, what are you like when Liverpool lose? Because I know that I'm not the best. I'm trying to get better. I've been told off on numerous occasions by the missus that, you know, if Liverpool have had a particularly bad result, you know, and the kids are around and I'm just acting like a child, you know, I basically need to cop on, you know, to myself and sort myself out. Shawnee, what are you like when Liverpool lose? Because I know you're an emotional guy like me. Are you something similar?
It depends. Do you know, if we're beaten, I'm a shy. I've gotten to the stage now, if we play bad and we get beaten, I'm like, we were poor. But when you get ripped off or you get cheated or something like that, my missus is sitting inside now, and I wasn't long with her at the time, the Kiev final. And I was with all the O's that night, and I ended up meeting her afterwards, and I had a few gargles on me. And we were downstairs in a place called 21, it's called Tramline now. But there was fucking Real Madrid buttons hanging out of the roof. And I started swinging out them and pulling them down in the middle of the bleeding place because we were getting beaten by them. I was in me horrors now. She wasn't long with me. So I was like, this cunt is a fucking, this fella's a psycho. And I'll actually pull her out the side. So I'm walking down the quays, and this is just an example of how bad I can be. We're walking down the quays, right? And Ramos does a shoulder roll and pulls fucking Yoke's arm out of bleeding socket. And I'm walking up and I said, see you fucking Spanish doorboards, fucking cheating animal, Gisele. She was going, what's wrong with you? It's only a game of football. I said, see fucking Ramos, dirty ball. Like, you can't win anything. You just have to be underhanded. It's sly when you I was full of venom, and I woke up the next morning beside Horch. He was like, "Are you all right?" says, "Oh yeah, it's only a game of football." And she goes, "Are you for real?" She was like, "Do you not remember what you were saying to me last night about my people, about Ramos?" Says, "No idea."
Ah, relax, love. Don't know what you're talking.
Honestly, I do be when we get cheated. See that Everton game. Honest to God.
Oh, don't get me started.
Days. It'll play at me for days, Jamie. I don't mind if we lose games and it's our fault. But my God, when we're cheated, that's when it hurts. Like, I stopped getting emotionally attached to actual footballers with Torres because I was walking up in the Forge at the time, like Phil and now the Black Forge. And I was a lounge boy cleaning glasses and picking up glasses. I remember walking out into the bar. And they just had the telly on. And remember when Sky Sports Yellow Bar was a thing? Remember? Mm-hmm. Something wasn't happening until it was on the Yellow Bar and Sky Sports. And I looked up and Fernando Torres at the handing in the transfer request. And I had to go home. I went home. I'm not even joking you. I turned around to me. I turned around to me, boss, Brian. He owns Slattery's now in town. And he always pulls this up when I see him. He goes, "Remember you went home sick when Torres handed in the transfer request?" It shattered my heart into a million pieces when he left Liverpool. Even though he wasn't great for the last 18 months, shattered my heart. I've never been scalded like that in my life by a foot. And I never will again. I never will again. That broke me. That really hurt. And that's when you know, it's only a bleeding game. It shouldn't feel like that, but it does because you care.
I think it gets easier when you have kids. They're a good distraction. I used to be awful. Like, you know, I go out with my wife 20 years, and when she's forced out going out with me, you know, she was into United. She doesn't care about anything now. She hopes Liverpool win just so the house is
you're in better form.
Intact. But it gets easier when you have kids, I think, because I see Liverpool, like Shani said, Liverpool lose, you go, "Yeah, but that was shy." And then the kids run in and do something, man, and you go, "Oh yeah, come on, we do that," and you kind of forget about it. It's more moments that upset me. You know, 13-14 and the Gerrard slip and Chelsea and all, that was just deflation and kind of, oh, fuck's sake. You know, 18-19, being in Liverpool the final day of the season and Brighton go ahead and you win and brilliant season and it doesn't happen, you kind of, you know what? And even the feeling around Liverpool that night was, we'd be back next season and how right they were, because Liverpool was absolutely fucking flying that night, by the way. But moments,
like a defiance.
But I think it's moments that kind of get me more and they hit me more. Dalglish leaving the club knocked me for six. It really did. You know, do you remember when it's in 74? Well, you don't remember it in 74, but you see the footage of when Bill Shankly announces his retirement and you see the lad on the street and you say, "Bill Shankly's retired," and he goes, "You're having me on." You loads of people have seen that footage and there's just disbelief. Dalglish was like that for me. Benitez leaving, I thought was awful. Hodgson being appointed, awful.
Jesus.
You know, but it's more moments. It's more moments near the outside of the actual game. That kind of gets me a bit more, you know. But when we lose, sometimes I'm like Shawnee, I'm like, they were shy. You know, what can you do when you get better next week? Sometimes when you're robbed, yeah, you get annoyed. But overall, I kind of get more affected by the moments around the club rather than the game. And I still think back to that FA Cup game and Dalglish walks out after and I just absolutely beside myself.
It's funny. I can rationalise a lot of what happens on the pitch, whereas certain things like you mentioned the Everton game, Shawnee, I couldn't make sense of that. And one of my favourite players, Henderson, scored a winner, you know, in a Merseyside derby and all the adversity. And then for it to be ruled out the way that it was. And I'd done I think we mentioned on a previous podcast, like a kid at a disco, old school knee slide up the hall when we'd scored the goal. That was a tough one for me. And I didn't recover for a long time after that. I don't think I really let myself get into the game. Phil, yours, I mean, you spoke about it for years. You were badly affected by the 80. 89, the result in 89. That was a tough one, boys, for you to get
just
over.
Remember this. Remember the safe word, boys. Mexico 86. Mexico 86.
When he starts going on about Barnes being in the corner here, I don't know how, but Phil says this loads of times, and I've always meaning to ask him. Like, I get you. Well, 1-0 up, Barnes has the chance to go into the corner and he goes attacking with it. I honestly, after 89 and what had happened, I didn't care. I genuinely didn't care. And I know people will say, oh, you're only saying that because Michael Thomas scored. I genuinely didn't. I don't see how football mattered. I really don't. And I know Phil gets very upset over it.
Phil?
It's an age thing. I'm 12 at that stage. Things are real. So when you've listened to, read the newspapers, and you've even seen on the news, Liverpool will win the league on Friday night, blah, blah, blah. They can even afford to lose and still win this league title. And every newspaper article was like, well, there's no chance Arsenal can win this league here. Like, just think about it. Liverpool can even afford to lose 1-0 and still win the league title, right? So you've got to remember, that's very strange for a young man's psyche, saying that we have this thing is in the bag. This is beyond even in the bag. Like, we're talking about, this is us last February. You know, when we there's no hope in hell that we can possibly win the lose the league from here. So we only need 3 points, right? Well, I've been there in that situation where you could afford to lose and still win the league title, and we'd also thrown away a massive lead. People forget that this has been a gradual culmination of everything that went on in 89. That this wasn't just one result, Gav. We'd thrown away a huge lead after the horrific tragedy of Hillsborough, right? And as we got closer to it, it was just a case, well, let's get over the line and then we can go on to the FA Cup and hopefully win a double, and that will be to respect their legacy and everything else that was there. So for me, there is that. But like, lads, you are just a couple of years behind me. That's all it is. Like, I you know, having grown up around the Titanic Pool Nike Coursed Football Club and Axe Athletic Grounds, right, for so long, so many things that have happened, you couldn't write it. And then when it culminates in the season that happened last year, where we win the league before we even get to Christmas, essentially, right? That, like, you couldn't have made it up, that the way you're going to win the league, everyone is expecting that will be a tight scramble and we'll just about get over the line in the last game or the last two games. It's there.
Yeah.
Instead, we're 5 million points ahead of everyone going into February. Right, do you know what I mean? Like, there's nobody catching us, and it's just a trot. And if the lockdown doesn't happen, people wouldn't even be paying attention to what's going on this season. They'd be still talking about the amount of points that we won the league by. Like, you'd still be talking about it. And that, to me, I think we get 100 points if we don't have the lockdown as well.
100%.
So, you know, when I talk about, but for me, the passion for results, I lost maybe. And I know, Jamie, it was in the agenda, but for me, the passion, I lost the passion in the results when I started doing this podcast. Right?
My next question, actually.
And it probably leads in, but like, for me, it just, I lost so much passion for the game doing the podcast. And it's off the back of trying not to be over the top, trying not to be too depressed and too, like, I remember when we started this, fuck me, we went through, we did 13-14. When we started in 13-14. I planned it from the end of 2012 onwards, and we started it in 2013 for the start of that season. And it was an emotional roller coaster, but you almost win the league. 14-15, man. We've lost loads of podcasts.
14-15 was fucking horrendous.
Go back and listen to it, and you're just looking at Skirtle, and you're looking at players and you're just going, fuck me, how did we end up back in this situation? Mignolet in goal and this pancake face and everything. And
the biggest travesty was Roy Hodgson taking Daniel Sturridge in that summer. We'd 14-15, yeah. If you remember, we'd signed Balotelli, haven't we? And
we have.
We beat Spurs 3-0 at White Hart Lane, and Sturridge goes off on international duty with Hodgson. Under the strict instruction that he needs certain rest and certain stretching and certain this, and they disregard the whole thing. And that ends Liverpool's season, because from then on, from August 2014, Sturridge is not the same player.
Yeah, we didn't score the goal for about 6 months after that then as well.
But back to the bigger point, Jamie. From that point, when you have to keep going and going through those results all the time, one of the things that happens for me is that something I recognised earlier is that people get lost in the micro nature of the result that's happened at the weekend without taking a step back and looking at the macro of the overall season. It's something we brought up last year, and when we started doing the forum as well, it was to get away from the micro. like the lads covered really well in the flat back four. The lads were covering it really well with the preview show at the weekend. And it was to do something that lifts you out from the micro, because people spend so much time being impacted by the result without looking at the larger lens. And which is like, well, where are we? As a club, where are we? Right? What does this look like? And even as we went on the run-in and you step back a bit and you looked at, well, how many points can this team get? If they go on a run of 8 wins, is that enough to get to the Champions League? It didn't look like it, but then it ends up being that way. And we're the only team that looks capable of doing it. So it's that when you stop being a fan, and I truly believe when you're doing these podcasts, and if you want to really get into them, You stop being a fan. I know people will say, well, no, I'm a fan, I go to the, but you can't, not if you want to do it properly. Not if you want to sit there and do an agenda and sort of take your mind out of everything that goes. No, seriously, if you want to take your mind to be able to drive discussion, to look at different points, to be able to sit there and say, okay, who am I going to have on this pod? Because I want to have somebody who's going to have a voice that's going to think this way. I'm going to have somebody who's very positive about things, but I also want somebody who's going to question everything that's going on. So it's that you have that debate. That it's not just a nodding shop. It's not just people sitting there agreeing that that whoever said that in the corner says the right point, and we all nod and say that's great. What's the point? Anyone can do that. Like that isn't what when I set the podcast up, it was always with a view of putting people's voices on who were different and had a different opinion. And the best compliment I've ever gotten doing this, and thankfully the way Gav has taken it on, it's the exact same way. The best compliment people always give is, it's like listening to the chat I have in the pub. It's like talking to my mates about
got to mute himself.
You muted yourself there, Phil. No, don't know what's happened there. I turn it off and turn it back on again, see if that works.
He's being censored, he is.
That's what it is. Gav, I'll come to you, because he does make a good point, actually.
There you go.
No, he's there.
He's back. I'll come to Gav, because Phil makes a good point, and it leads me on kind of nicely. We've got three questions that I want to get through, and then we'll wrap up. And I know what Phil means, particularly when I'm hosting. I don't really give opinions. I'm about getting opinions out of the people that are on the show. And I think that's important. You want to create a conversation and different viewpoints and prod at certain points. So I know what Phil means. You desensitize yourself a little bit. But Gav, you know, obviously Phil created the podcast and went through some bleak times, as a club, and obviously covered those on the podcast. How have things changed for you, obviously, since you're running the show, and obviously you're spinning a lot of plates? How has being part of this podcast changed you as a fan, whether that's in a positive way, you know, made you, as Phil says, kind of desensitized? What impact has it had on you?
It makes you a lot, not even running a podcast or you know, organizing it. I think being part of a podcast makes you, and even being part of the chat, I think it makes you more open to people's opinions. You know, like I've often had, you know, opinions on football or opinions on a game and going, oh, fuck that, I'm not listening to nobody, and that's the fucking end of it. And they were shy, or they were great, or they were robbed, or whatever it might be. And Phil mentioned there about the fat back four, and, you know, we still do that every Sunday. And Grizz always says it, you know, what you see on screen is what you see off screen. And that he's bang on. Because me and Shawnee had row, Grizz had row with Shawnee, Keith would have a row, I'd have a row with Keith.
Everyone,
all the way through WhatsApp for the week, and then we get on. And the first thing we say to each other when the four of us get on at 5 to 10 or 10 to 10 or something, like, what's the story, lads? All right, I'm like literally 10 minutes earlier, I could be saying to Shawnee, would you ever shut the fuck up? You know what I mean? Or Shawnee could be the same to me or Grizz or whatever it might be. I think we're doing a podcast or even being in a chat about a podcast, it opens your mind to more football. I think it opens your mind to other people's opinions, how to take them, how to give your opinion. But Phil is right. You have to desensitize yourself a little bit, because if you don't desensitize yourself, you start to look a bit silly. All right. And I'm not saying take the emotion away. I'm not saying take the passion away. But there is times where if I didn't desensitize myself a little bit, like I've gone on rants. Trust me, I've gone on rants. Everyone fucking here knows that. But if I was full on, like, I wouldn't be here tomorrow. I'll probably do that way. So it does make you, and I'm not doing that to you know, dull it down a bit and make it more presentable. I'm doing it because over the years of doing this podcast, and in fairness, I'm doing this podcast because Phil and Andy asked me to go and do a podcast. And when I do it now, I suppose when I look at it, I kind of think to myself, you know, yeah, you're probably emotional, but you have to channel it in the right way. And if you channel it in the right way, you get better things out of yourself, better things out of other people, and it becomes a better show. You're not trying to produce a show, because I can promise you, we don't come on here with, like, Jamie gives an agenda. Like, I've never seen an agenda.
Yeah, it's after getting butchered. We butchered about X in the city, skid marks.
But genuinely, like, the only other person I've seen try to come up with an agenda, and this will amaze you, is Grizz Khan. And Grizz Khan will say, oh, I'll do the agendas, lads. And I promise you, 2 weeks later, he's forgot all about the fact that he's doing the agenda. You know, the sort of way. So just come on, and we know what we're going to talk about, and we do it. You know, the sort of way. But I think the biggest thing out of the podcast, and even if you've got one of those listeners to come on now and talk to us, I think from watching us, not that they've learned anything, but they've realised that you can go absolutely off on tangents, which is great. You can go up high, you can go really low with regards to your feelings. But if you channel it in the right way, it becomes a much better discussion. And Phil's right, you know, we pride ourselves on a couple of things. One is always being free. And two is that the chances are what you're hearing is what you're going to hear down the pub. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's, I think that's the biggest thing of the lot. I think the fact that it's become a community, and the fact that people feel involved, and the fact that you would watch this and go, yeah, I heard a fella down the pub saying similar a couple of days ago. I think that's a huge thing.
I think Emmett nails it. He says LFC Day Trippers is everybody's football WhatsApp group in podcast form. Different opinions, but every opinion valued at the same time. Yes, there'll be arguments, but everyone's still pals in the end. And that for me, it's absolutely it. And I think Phil said it before, you don't just want nodding dogs. And the fact that we're able to poke fun, have different opinions, and row, like, at the time, you mean it, you know. But that, I think, is the beauty of it, Shawnee.
Like, you three lads have had different experience with podcasts than me, because you have all had to be the captain of the ship at some stage. You know what I mean? Like, when I first started, Phil was one of the fellas who was up in the bunker. Gav, you're doing it now. Jamie, you hosted shows. Whereas I've only have to come in and be like a supporting cast. But I'm going to be 100% honest with you here. I'm so selfish when it comes to how I feel about what the podcast is, because it's opened doors for me that I thought would never be possible. And I'm not talking about, like, talking about football. I'm talking about, I'm going to get a bit soppy here because it's just the truth. It's the friendships that I've made throughout this podcast. It's people that I know now that I would have never known. It's experiences that I've had that I never would have had. And I know Phil, Gav, they don't see it that way. I was in Madrid with Dicko and Steve, would have never happened if it wasn't for the podcast. I have mates now, like that WhatsApp group, I'd be snapping after 90% of the games. And then I go in that WhatsApp group after 10 minutes. And it feels like, if you listen to the Blind Boy podcast, he has something that's called the podcast hug. Is just someone in there making you laugh, or that with an argument or something else mad that's going on.
But the motto, Shawnee, in that WhatsApp group, way, isn't it?
In a way, it's like a family. Like, you know what I mean? Jamie has been in and out of that WhatsApp group more times than I care to imagine. Because
more comebacks than Ric Flair.
Yeah, that's... He's like... It's just...
I'm learning.
It's a mad gaff. And the best thing is that we've been out on nights out, and it's like a podcast where nobody's listening and nobody's watching, only us, and we're having the crack. Like, the stories that you can tell from, just like, 5 years, 6 years is all I've been doing this for, since the 15, 16 season, I think. And the amount of stories I have just from being in the company of the lads, and then it's going on to this, it's unbelievable. This has completely changed my experience as a fan and football, because imagine me last year, Liverpool win the league. Oh, yeah, it's great. I'll be up with me brothers, Gaff, having the crack. But I don't get to have the crack with yous and experience all that the way we did. Do you know what I mean? In the Camden or in Madrid, or, like, it's unbelievable, like, what it's done. Like, it's changed everything. And it's great that so many people now are listening in and they feel the same way about it. Because you get all, like, football media is diabolical these days. It's absolutely over-pushed, over-analyzed, over-hyperbole bollocks talk. Let's be honest. That's what it is, a lot of it. This is just raw. This is raw. We'll go off now. I'll be getting slagged in the WhatsApp for this. Phil will be getting lashed out for tomorrow for something he says.
Phil got lashed out earlier because he had the audacity to go and get a vaccine and wasn't feeling unwell after. It was fucking amazing.
There'll be photoshops of Gav. It's mental. Honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. The season's over. But if you want to get into the WhatsApp, Revolut me a tenner and I'll add you in. And trust me, it'll be the best tenner you've ever spent.
Shani's looking for the spending money for Carrick and Shannon. The motto to that WhatsApp group though is, and it's the rule number one, if you can survive 30 minutes in that WhatsApp group after Liverpool draw or defeat, you'll be absolutely fine. That's the motto.
That was my stumbling block for a long time, but I've got over it now.
I've got my microphone working on my earphones. I can hear what you're saying. It's great. Some of the lads there saying bring back the bunker. I think for me, when we started doing this in the lockdown, I thought, I'll just do a couple. And I don't know if this internet stuff is going to work. I don't know if this internet is going to catch on with these people or anything like that. But it seems to work, right? But I can't wait. And I'll be honest with you, I can't wait to get back in to our shed and start having people around the table again. Because there's one question I've never answered. Why did I set this up? Right? Why did I set up the podcast with Andy and Steve-O right back at the very start? Why did I set it up? And for me, it was to replace the dressing room that I was no longer in because I packed in playing football. I didn't like coaching. Didn't want to be a manager. I didn't want to spend that time because it just used to hurt me that I wasn't playing anymore. Right. But to be able to go to a small space, be it the Astro Park in Tallaght where we used to do it, or back up to where we built the studio, and you get five or six people in. Anyone that's been in a dressing room, in a football changing room, there's always five or six that you always have a chat with.
You used to come through the door like the most miserable man in the world with the laptop on the thing, and you go, I fucking hate all of yous. And then you just knock on the laptop.
Yeah, and then we'd start, and then Phil number four would pop in the door to start it all off, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, and then I'd have a bit of crack by the end of it, and then I'd walk back out and I'd be smiling as I walk back out the door. Like, to me, I used to hate going training, used to hate going playing matches, but then I'd play it and I'd come back in and it'd be great crack afterwards, even win, lose, or draw. Like, do you know what I mean? And to me, that was the reason, Gav. That was, I'd met Steve, I'd met Andy socially in terms of what we've done. I'd met a few of the other lads that are involved even now. Like, I knew Shane from playing ball. And all that type of stuff, and used to get on with them and have the crack. So to take that fun and games that we had and put it into something that we could push out there, and we took it so far and we did a great job right at the start, but then my love for it was lost. And my love for it was genuinely lost of doing it, because as you know yourself, Gav, there's so much to do and there's so much to have to keep doing. And I was trying to hold down a full-time job. There's other stuff going on, and it was just a drag, right?
Now, yeah, but being able just blessed that I retired, you see.
That's it. And thankfully, you retired and came back like Ric Flair and took this on and started building again. But that brought my love back for it, because I could just focus on doing the show. As Johnny says, for me, it's even though I still do my bits in terms of what's going on, the show, I'm able to just focus on, here's the form, what are we doing? Here's the four topics, right, go for it. And if I can't make it 1 week, it doesn't make that much of a difference. I used to feel terrible if I couldn't make it back 2 or 3 years ago because it wasn't going to be a show. Or it'd be a nightmare. And then I'd end up getting 10 phone calls saying, how do you turn this on? What do you do here? What do you do there? Do you know? And Jamie, when you talk about, when that's going on and you're trying to watch the matches, you're just going, fuck football. Do you know what I mean? I want something that takes me away from all this and doesn't become a bugbear. And that's what we have now. Now Gav has to deal with all that shit. I don't have to deal with it. It's great.
Oh, yeah, but the problem I have is that, yeah, I've all that to deal with, but I just keep finding more stuff to do. I don't know why I keep doing it. And every day I go, oh, for fuck's sake, Gav. And I've more stuff to do. But to be honest with you, like Shani was saying there, it's raw. And, you know, Phil was saying that you do get a bug for it. And Jamie's the same. I know Jamie's the same. Jamie gets a bug for it. All the lads get a bug for it. Like, people are asking there, what's going to happen when the studio comes back with it? Like, the plan is to fly Grizz into Dublin twice a month for the Fatback Four on a Sunday night. The forum will definitely go there. What we have to do a bit of work on the studio because it's been lying idle for over a year. So we have to go in and check what state it's in. And then do some sort of revamp on it. But we'll only bring it back to you when it's absolutely ready to go. And the people that are going to be in it are happy with it. Because there's no point in me going down and going, that looks great. There you go, lads, Monday night. It doesn't work like that. Everyone has to come in and give their input. And yeah, I like that. I don't like that. Move this, move that. And that's what happens. But look, the only thing I would say is that I think when the studio comes back, it's going to even get better. But we never want to lose that chat. So we'll always make sure that chat is there because Shawnee will tell you, Grizz, Keith, Phil, Andy, Jamie, Davo, you know, Chris Brack, anyone that's on, the chat makes it. We only had a conversation.
Grizz and Keith Smith will never win another fucking quiz again if there's no chat.
Yeah, well, that's true. But the thing is, like, it does make it because, like, loads of people have told us that, you know, you've got me through COVID, you know, you've got me through this lockdown, you've got me through that. And that's great. But it goes back the other way as well. You know, the kind of way. Like, us doing this, well, every night gets us through it. Do you know the sort of way? So, look, all we can do is keep going and try our best and try not to fucking absolutely annihilate Jamie's fucking agendas from here on in.
No, Stefan said in the chat there about my agenda and whatever. And my job as a host is to get you lads talking. So, you know, when I come up with these agendas and I think of different topics, you know, bringing up the podcast and how it started and how it's evolved, to get you talking and maybe showing a side of yourselves that maybe doesn't come through all the time when we're talking about, you know, what's happened within a football match is gold for me. You've all been super sports, and there is two questions that I want to finish on before we wrap up, because we'll probably be here till midnight, right? And I'm going to come to you first, Shawnee. So to pull it back to Liverpool, favorite ever player, favorite player in the current squad, most disliked player, and your most underrated player, please. And then I'm going to go around the room.
Is that four questions?
Well, there's actually another question to come after this one, but yeah, right. four in the one.
Okay.
Favourite ever player won't be anyone that any of you have. Xabi Alonso is my favourite ever Liverpool player. Don't ask me why. Just infatuated with the bloke. And I have, even more so when he left Liverpool, I nearly ended up just following him, to be honest with you.
Virgil now at this stage, yeah, I think.
I just love the player. He leaves Liverpool. He's one of the reasons why I have a slight dislike to Rafa Benitez for the way he fucked him out for Gareth Barry, and it never happened. I love Xabi Alonso. I always did. Favourite player in this current squad, like I was saying earlier, I'd like to think that I look at the players that I think it means most to. And I love Trent. I love Trent Alexander. You see that run of games he goes on. I think it means more to him playing by Liverpool than anyone else in that team. The same way it did for Gerrard. And I love Gerrard. He might be in there. But Trent in this current one, most disliked player, simple one, El Hadj Diouf. He was a knacker. That's the only word I have for him. He was a knacker. He brought disgrace to the jersey, and he's done nothing but talk shite ever since he left. He's a doorport. He's a scumbag. That's just spitting at fans, disrespecting the jersey. Most underrated player. I'm saying this and I'm being honest with you. The most underrated player is playing in this team now, and I hate the disrespect that he gets. And people can turn around and say, oh, no. But he's all fucking deal. As soon as he has a few bad games, everyone blames him. And everyone's turning around. Mohamed Salah is the most disrespected footballer in the history of Liverpool.
Straight up. Phil sits straight up as soon as that name came out of his mouth. Now,
he is the most disrespected. And to talk about a fella who has carried us this season, and I'm being honest with you, you can say whatever you want in the chat, he should be held in the same regard as your Dalglishes. Forget about Fowler and fucking Owen. Fowler won nothing with Liverpool won't win it. That's the truth. He was a local lad who banged in a load of goals. Get a stick for that God, whatever you call him. Mo Salah, what he's done for this football club since he came in, he is in the echelon of the greats of your Dalglishes, of your Souneses, of your John Barneses. Mo Salah is the embodiment of this Liverpool team. He's elite. He's always showed up. And talking about Genie leaving and being a club legend, this fella is the most disrespected by outsiders and by insiders. I see people turning around saying they'd sell him for this and for that. As soon as he has a couple of bad games, he's gone off the boil. Everyone blames him. He gets the blame on everything. Salah always gets the blame on everything. He's the most underrated player to ever play for Liverpool in my time, because he's not regarded as one of the greatest footballers to ever wear the jersey, and he should be.
Phil, Tom says it perfectly in the chat. 3-2-1, let Phil go.
No, I've said it numerous times on the forum. Mo Salah is the greatest player we've ever had at this club. There isn't a player that can actually touch what he's done, what he's delivered, and what he's brought in. And people will argue about Kenny, and they'll argue fair enough with John Barnes and Steve Gerrard and everything. But in 10 years' time, when we stand back and we compare players, we're going to look at Salah and go, fuck me. This is a fella who's at the level of Messi and Ronaldo playing for Liverpool at a point where we do two Champions League finals back to back, we finish runners up and then go win the league. We break that mental thing about getting over the league. And I completely agree with Sean. Mo Salah, to me, is the greatest Liverpool player to have ever worn the jersey. And I just wish he wore a number 7, because that would be the legacy for me, which would be perfect, because you'd have the Kenny legacy, you had Suarez, and you have Salah. Salah is like, if to ask me who my favourite player is always going to be Luis Suarez, because he has the madness that I adore in players. It's like when we have the debate around Messi and Maradona. For me, it's Maradona over Messi, because he has the madness. He does the mad things, but also achieve greatness. And my greatest regret is for both Gerrard and Suarez not to have won the league in that team, because I think it would have been such an amazing thing to have between Sturridge. I think those players in 2013-14 deserved to win the league. I thought they were brilliant in terms of what they did and deserved to win it. But Salah, for me, is just simply the best. But Suarez, yeah, is my favourite. And again, Suarez is my favourite purely for the nastiness in him, purely for the insanity, for the biting, for everything that went on with him, right? I'm not condoning the racism. I won't condone that. But I will say for the mad things like biting Chiellini's shoulder in the World Cup, for saving that ball and being hated by everyone in a previous World Cup, for the stuff that he does. Look, Salah, Suarez to me, but today I'd watch Salah, put him on the television and just going to watch the guy play. And I hate when people say, look at the amount of chances he misses. He scores 40-odd goals a season. If he can miss 5 or 6, he's the only one that's scoring all the time. He's brilliant. Love him.
But it's the thing that annoys me is like, oh, he doesn't care. He doesn't celebrate goals. This, that, and the other. Like, look at the raw emotion after the goal against United. He's being left out of all these teams in the year and all. Salah is a ridiculous... We don't appreciate him, because there's so many good footballers in the side at the moment. That's the reason why we don't appreciate him. Because there's Mane, there's Virgil.
You've got a few of these you could pick. Most disliked player. Because you've certainly been vocal around one or two in the past.
I've got a list longer than the players that I like, but like my most disliked player was Lucas Leiva. I hate him. He's basically he's the epitome of Liverpool being shit, right?
That's probably how we met, was arguing over Lucas Leiva on Twitter.
He also blocked me as well. And I've never tagged him in a tweet or everything.
Albert Moreno blocked me.
So he must have searched up his name when I was just talking about him. But like, any time you think of Liverpool being shit in the last 30 years, Leiva was in the middle of that midfield. Absolute gicknat, right? I was delighted when you see the stuff. He was at the club 10 years. That's just because we were crap for 10 years. Like, he wouldn't have survived in a squad up until now. Lucas is my most disliked player. Like, and that's over Downing, John Glenson, Scratchell. I just cannot stand, like, there was so many crap players. Like, there's so many bad ones, but Lucas is at the top of the tree, because every time you see him being rolled out, I mean, put in the middle of that pack, we were not finishing anywhere near top four. And people, he was great. Servant. Yeah, he was great. Servant. Brilliant. When we were crap.
I can't believe the amount of... the amount of shite that play for us, and Phil picks the most 6, 7 out of 10 player that's ever played for a club in his history as his most hated.
I just hate him. He's just nut, random porridge, the length of a pitch from the time he got. Lucas came here as the next Gerrard, and he was more like the ready brick man, just walking around with a glow off. It was geek.
Who's your underrated player?
Underrated player. It's always an interesting one, that underrated. I think Sammy Hoopia, if you consider what we paid for and what he did. But I think Stefan Honcho beside Hoopia, for everything that goes on in that team and for what they achieved, Honcho was the bedrock along with Hoopia. And people never talk about him as being a great Liverpool centre-back or anything like that. But without Honcho, you don't have... And I hated Houllier's time at the club, but like, you don't have all the trophies that went on. Because those two were inseparable. And they weren't the same team without it. Like, I could have said Finnan as well. I love Finnan, but that's where we used to have the original logo with Steve Finnan. But like, yeah, Honcho, for what he does, and he even single-handedly pulls off three of the best saves that we've seen in a cup final as a Liverpool player. If we had Honcho on goal the night of the Champions League final against Real Madrid, we would have won that match.
I wouldn't have had a fall now with me misses anyway, that's for sure.
And you wouldn't have had to remember it.
No. So we know who your favourite ever is, John Barnes, I'm guessing. Favourite ever in the, well, favourites in the current squad, I should say.
Well, it's definitely John Barnes. I'm not letting that pass without telling you how good John Barnes was. Shawnee's always asked me about John Barnes, and I keep telling him just go on YouTube.
It's a shame. I wonder if your woman who had Moby joke in the attic has a few tapes she could
listen, Shawnee, just go and type John Barnes compilation and you'll find 10-12 minute videos. He was so fucking good. He just had everything. He had fucking everything. He was so fucking good. The best player, is it the best player in this current squad?
Yeah, correct.
Or your favourite player?
Favourite, yeah.
I like the trend show. I love Andy Robolo, I have to say. He's all action. He's actually a throwback. He's a bit of a throwback where he just... There's not a lot of fancy about him, but he's a fucking extremely good footballer. You know, he can get up and down. He has pace. He gets the odd goal. He gets assists. There's a bit of Steve Nicol off him, that he can kind of do everything. I love Robbo. I have to say I love Robbo, but there's so many players to love on that side. Like it's nearly criminal not to think Virgil van Dijk, because I think he's the best defender we've had in 30 years. Easy.
Ever.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. But when you look at Hansen and stuff like that, Hansen was fucking outrageous. But
just the best ever played a game.
It's a great show, and it's probably criminal not to pick Virgil. But I think my favorite is probably Andy Robbo, because I just love the way, I love his passion, I love his enthusiasm. When you're slapping Messi across the back of the head, you get my vote. It's as simple as that. What was the next one?
Disliked and underrated.
Disliked is definitely El Hadj Diouf. He's just a fucking prick. That's the end of that one. And underrated in all time watching Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's kind of a hard one, because I think when players leave, they get a lot more credit than when they play it. I think Mascherano is a huge show. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when Mascherano played, people thought he was just ran around and shuttled and tackled, but he'd done a lot more than that. And he gets more respect now, I think, than when he was at the club. But I'd probably go with Javier Mascherano, because he was so fucking good. He was so good. And he was that good that he left that brilliant position where he was so good and went and played centre-half for 5 years, and he was fucking great.
For Barcelona?
Yeah.
Just didn't go and play for some hatchet job.
No. He literally went and played for one of the best club sides you've ever seen. And not a bother to him. I think the Salah stuff is very, very true. I think he's probably one of the most underrated or most disrespected footballers you've ever seen.
I don't want to come across edgy saying Salah around, but it's just true. I feel that he doesn't get the love he deserves from any part of the footballing world. I really don't.
Jay,
it's ridiculous.
Can I just give a left field shout for underrated player?
Go on. Right.
Nigel Spackman. If anyone had to watch the 87 to 89
films. He sounds like a blatant WWF wrestler. He fought Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 13 or something.
Anyone goes back, if you see the influence that Spackman had on that team, that 87-88 team, honest to God, I encourage anyone to go back and watch it. He was immense. And that was when Whelan had injuries and McMahon had injuries, and he stepped in and he marshalled that midfield. So there you go. Stick in Nigel Spackman there, is underrated. Well, nobody even remembers he plays for us.
There's two things to YouTube. John Barnes compilations, and if you can get Liverpool 5, Nottingham Forest 0, enjoy, because it was outrageous.
Right, the last question to finish, lads, right? And I'm going to go around the room. Yeah, Nigel Spackman is the answer to the question that I haven't asked. I'm going to come to you first, Shawnee. What does Liverpool Football Club mean to you? And whenever we do these shows, I'm going to finish with the cheesy answer. Simply put, what does the club mean to you?
Too much, I think, that I've risked relationships, friendships, and everything on the back of it. And the fact of the matter is, it is only a game. But look, outside your family and your friends, it's football, and then Liverpool in that order. That's the way it is for me. It's massive for me. And Liverpool, as we know, has been taken away from us because I love going over to games. I love going up to the bunker. I love going out with my mates to watch football, watch games out, and even meet up with you lads and have a few points or whatever. And I just can't wait to do all that again, because that's a staple in my life. Is that I'd plan trips to Liverpool, around other things, you know what I mean? If someone said, "Oh yeah, I'm getting married," I'd say, "Yeah, well, I can't go."
You might want to knock her on the head, buddy, till the end of the season.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. When is it? Yeah, all right. That's just the way. If I arranged the wedding and we ended up married, I hear the blokes, "Oh, I got married on the day of the Champions League final." I'm like, yeah, bleeding dope. I would have been putting her out. That's how seriously I take Liverpool. I don't care about a 10 grand deposit for a hotel. They can go and swivel. But now it means everything. It means everything without.
A hell of a lot. A hell of a lot. I think it's one of those relationships you have that, it's been a cunt of a relationship for a lot of the time. It really has. When you look at the mid-90s, when you're getting the odd League Cup and stuff like that, and then you look at the Hodgson years, but then when you look at even 13, 14, you don't win a league, but that's one of the best seasons you've ever watched. It's memories, and it's the definition of a long-term relationship that has ups and downs. When you hear people going, "How do you get on? We have our ups and downs." That's exactly what it is. Like I said, I'm nearly 40 years of age. I have two kids, and those kids take up an awful lot of your time and your emotion and stuff like that. But Liverpool sneaks in there in a big way. And, my daughter asked about Liverpool, walks around singing Dirty Old Town to the Virgil van Dijk words. And she's asking me to order Virgil van Dijk t-shirts off our site and stuff like that. And my son hasn't got a clue, but he will. But it means a hell of a lot, Jamie. It really does. And, it's only when you sit back and think about it, how much it actually shapes your week, how it shapes your weekend, how it shapes your humour. There's good times, there's bad times, there's awful times, but I don't think you change it. I don't think you would change it, because I often think, not even doing this podcast, but I even think, who doesn't support football? What would you be fucking doing if you didn't support football?
My son.
They're weird. Yeah, you know what I mean? And, genuinely, I think that, and I'm probably completely wrong, they support another sport, no interest in football, but it's only when you sit back and think about, if it wasn't there, actually how big it is. And it's huge. It's absolutely huge, People are saying there about Celtic being your second side and stuff like that. Celtic were never my second side. I had never an interest in Celtic Rangers and stuff like that. League of Ireland was always my other love, and Shamrock Rovers and still are. And, if you ask me this on the Shamrock Rovers podcast next week, what did he mean to you? I'd probably say the exact same thing. But it just means a hell of a lot, and it ends up shaping your life. It actually does when you think about it. It shapes your life.
Phil?
Nothing.
There he is now. Here's Edgy
Hearn. Edgy Van Halen now.
Here's Edgy Hearn's going to give you an update on Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury now as well.
Edgy Guerrero.
Edgy Guerrero. Latino Heat. No, nothing. I get the lads and the passion that's there, and it's great. Liverpool for me is a pastime, right? It's an enjoyable pastime that's allowed me to forge great friendships and look forward to things that will be we can do in the future, right? After that, like when people put like Liverpool, like for me, I have family, I have kids and stuff like that. That's always going to be above what's there. Football for me now is something that fits into my life, where before it used to be something that dominated my life, right? And that's just being straight, Jay. But without Liverpool, I wouldn't have the friends I have. I wouldn't have the crack I have. So it's always going to be the draw that brings me back to want to talk about football, want to talk to the lads, want to talk about what's going on. And that to me is, it's what do they call those things? Fulcrum. It's a fulcrum, right? It's something that everything that's not serious revolves around. Do you get me? And when I say that's my pastime, it's where I can go to take myself away from the stress and the
escapism is a word that's come up a lot in the chat tonight.
And the hardships that exists. And that's why when you say to me, what does Liverpool? Liverpool in reality means nothing, but it means so much. And that's why I love it. Do you know what I mean? That's why you love it, because it's something that you put your own effort and your own time into. You don't have to. There's nothing that draws you to do it, but you make the effort to do it. And that's where I'm coming from. So on me, Edgy Van Halen, Edgy Guerrero shout, it's a genuine affection for a club that's given me so much, but doesn't it really impact the seriousness that everyday life is. It's the bit that it's my escapism.
Just to let people know.
He's at the knocking the bollocks out of answer, isn't he?
Just to let people know that when COVID is lifted and you know, we're able to meet up again, we'll all be having the crack on this side of the room. But if you pay €5 to meet Phil in a soundproof booty, we'll just tell you home truths and send you home.
Right, lads, we got a super chat in there right at the very end. Only fake fans have a second side. Loyal fans find a side and stick with them through the good and the bad times.
That must be at me, Michael.
Michael Ramsey's always having goes at you.
I love it. But just to let you know, Michael, I'm from Dublin in Ireland, and I actually support a team that I shouldn't support because it's on the wrong side of the sea. But I was brought there, and it was the first live game I've ever been at. So that's why I have two teams, and I'm not apologising for it, if that's okay with you.
Now, we're going to wrap up, lads, because it's 12 o'clock at night. So before we do, I enjoyed that. There's something a little bit different, and it turned out exactly the way I'd hoped. So I appreciate that. Gav, before we wrap up, what's coming up for the rest of the week?
We have a night off tomorrow. Thank God. We just seem to work all the time, don't we? Thursday is a transfer agenda show. I think Grizz, Keith, Avi, it'll be definitely on there. Friday night is Chris Brack, the Friday forecast, and that's another look at one of Liverpool's European runs. I'm not too sure which year yet. And off Saturday, as normal, I'm back on Sunday. But yeah, we're back on Sunday with the Fatback. We are launching a Euro 2021 Fantasy League tomorrow. That came up today. And as I said, we haven't got enough to do. We just start doing that. And the winner
don't put any Spain players in your team, because it looks like they're going to have to pull out a fucking tournament.
It's a winner takes all, and the winner will get a national jersey or Liverpool jersey if you want. A jersey, your choice. How does that sound? So it's a winner takes all in the Euros. That's about it. Yeah, that's about it. I think we're good. The Siena stuff, of course, go make sure you support Siena. All money made by the LFC day trippers in June is going to Siena. So if we're doing that, you can throw a few quid in the GoFundMe, walk, run, jog 5K on your own or with your family, pay 20 quid to do that and let us know about it, or go onto the site. And as I said, all profits from the Siena range on our merchandise site go straight to Siena as well, because we are not going to stop until that girl goes to America and gets treatment. And do you know what? I heard something the other day, Jamie, and sorry to go on because I know it is nearly 12 o'clock at night, but I heard something the other day, and it was our mother. And our mother said to me the other day, it's a massive thing for her to have this treatment, because you know, she's a very, very young child with this disease or whatever that she has. And our mother said, all I want to do is see her walk through the school gates like the rest of our siblings did. And that was it for me. It wasn't about like America and, you know, oh, let's go. It was just about, she just wants to see her daughter walk through the school gates the same as anybody else. And that's probably not this September, probably next September. So listen, the Sienna stuff, we're pushing at the moment, but, and we're still working on stuff, but when we get it right, we're never leaving it alone until that girl gets to €120,000, goes to St. Louis, gets the treatment, comes home, and is running around slide tackling Phil because he hates Liverpool Football Club and Athletic Grounds.
But well, loves them. Exactly. What a note to finish on. Right. Big thank you to Gav, Shawnee and Phil for your time and your stories. We did try to do something a little bit different tonight and delighted with how it came out. So if you could leave us a like on the video before you wrap up, that'd be very much appreciated. And also leave any comments in the sections below the video, any feedback, whether you want to tell us what some of your highlights have been as your time as a fan, or you just want to give us feedback on the show, it'll all be appreciated. So with that, I hope you have all enjoyed the show. Make sure you have a great remainder of your week, and I'll be back with you again next week on the Midweek Fix. All the best.
Sports Social Podcast Network.